Woke culture apparently never sleeps. These days, it is targeting Witherspoon, as in John Witherspoon, a very important founding father in America. Reverend Dr. John Witherspoon, a devout Presbyterian from Scotland, was the president of Princeton, at the time a very devout and patriotic school. Witherspoon is perhaps best known as the founding father who trained so many of the other founding fathers in biblical principles of government. He himself attended the Continental Congress that signed the Declaration of Independence. It is often said he was the only practicing minister at the time who signed that document. One of those students that Witherspoon trained at Princeton was James Madison, a key architect to the U.S. Constitution. Well, apparently, like so many others at the time, including Madison, Witherspoon owned a couple of domestic slaves for a time. So now the forces of woke are demanding that his statue at the Ivy League school that he contributed so much to in the late 1700s, that statue needs to be removed, they say. An article in the National Review, to which we'll link, covers this kerfuffle. Kirby Anderson is a Christian radio host and author of many books and an apologist for the faith. He's very knowledgeable about America's Christian roots. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we welcome back to the program Kirby Anderson. Kirby, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. And again, I've been on the campus and actually have had a chance to speak there at Princeton. That was years ago. And it is amazing that here this wonderful statue they want to take down. Of course, I guess we've seen that in other venues, but it certainly, I think, illustrates again that a lot of these students at Princeton really don't know our history. And that's why you're covering this today.
Well, of course, Princeton is in New Jersey. It's relatively close to Philadelphia. Some people might be thinking, wait a minute, I thought only the South had slaves.
Well, and again, as we well know about him, he had them for a time. But again, let's give him some credit, because if nothing else, he was an individual that also baptized a fugitive slave in Scotland, really expected to free his slaves later on. Oftentimes you inherit those. And of course, he is a classic illustration of some of the people that were in the North or abolitionists and hated the institution of slavery and wanted to do what they could to get rid of it.
And, of course, some of the founding fathers, even prominent ones, were slave owners. In the example of George Washington, he was a fourth-generation slave owner, and by the time of his death, he freed his slaves in his will at the death of his wife. So this is very significant, because it's like, okay, Washington saying, I'm going to break the cycle. Other founding fathers weren't as able, you know, to do that, but they help create the framework by which slavery would one day be uprooted.
Well, again, you've got to recognize that there is a tendency now to assume that the same kind of moral stance we have in the 21st century needs to be applied in the 18th century. You know, I know you've been on with Bill Maher, and Bill Maher the other day, though he's a liberal and an atheist, said to some of the listeners out there that were maybe millennials or Gen Z, you know, you think that if you lived in the 18th century, you'd be against slavery. And I hate to tell you, but you probably would not. You probably would have gone along with it. You probably wouldn't have thought about it, because slavery has been around for millennia. And in some respects, what I think we should emphasize, Jerry, as I know you have on your program many times, is not the fact that there were slave owners, but because of the Declaration of Independence, which of course was signed by John Witherspoon, and then the Constitution, we eventually saw the abolitionist ideas winning out, and we were able to end slavery in America, just as of course you have William Wilberforce ending the slave trade in England. So instead of focusing on the negative, why can't we focus on some of the positive and recognize that actually Princeton wouldn't exist if it weren't for John Witherspoon in the first place?
Well, he certainly added a lot of life to it, no question about that. I once interviewed Dr. Walter Williams, a prominent African-American scholar. He used to teach at George Mason University until his death about a year or two ago. And I interviewed him for that series of programs that you and I have discussed sometimes on your program, and I thank you for that, The Foundation of American Liberty, which is really all about our Judeo-Christian roots. And when I asked Dr. Williams about slavery and the American experience, because some people essentially want to disown America as a nation because of slavery, you know, at that was there at the beginning. And, you know, through a couple centuries, really. So anyway, he said this. He said, look, it's important to realize that, unfortunately, slavery has been mankind's fare from the beginning of civilization, as far as recorded history is concerned. He said even the word itself, slaves, is derived from the Slavs, as in the Slavic people. He said Africans being enslaved was a relatively new development. But he said the important thing is that in the Western world, we spent tremendous resources to uproot the tradition and practice of slavery. So people need to put these things into perspective. Otherwise, they get a distorted picture.
And I think what he said is, again, something I remember Bill Maher saying as well. When you have individuals, both liberal and conservative, individuals that have certainly recognized that there are some very positive aspects of American culture, and as you, Jerry, and I have talked about before, we have some very dark chapters in American history, the Indian Wars and the slave trade. Let's look at what we were able to accomplish. And when you look at the fact that, again, this is a statue to, if anything, remind them of the courage of John Witherspoon, the courage not only to stand up and sign the Declaration, because as this one article that appeared in National Review points out, as a Presbyterian minister, it is quite possible, as well as a college president, he really risked the possibility of execution or at the very least prison if the American Revolution failed. So here is an individual who's willing to sign the Declaration of Independence to really stand for those issues. And then, as you've pointed out before, the impact that he had just on one individual alone, James Madison, who we oftentimes refer to as the architect of the Constitution, you know, 77 members of Congress, 3 Supreme Court justices were taught by John Witherspoon, and most importantly, of course, James Madison, who was not only the architect of the Constitution, one of our presidents. The impact of this individual for a few students to object to this, I think, really goes beyond the pale and illustrates again why we need to know our history.
Boy, we certainly do. And in fact, the Founding Fathers said in the Declaration of Independence, and that includes John Witherspoon, who signed it, said that at the end of it, with a trust on, you know, in divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And research shows that some of the men were killed because of their stance. That was just a small handful, thankfully. That when it comes to property, that was the biggest loss. So in other words, sometimes the British would target people who would sign, men who had signed the Declaration of Independence, and that included Witherspoon. And so it is said that the British troops, you know, destroyed much of his library that he had brought over from Scotland there at Princeton, mm-hmm. and so forth. So they paid a high price, including Witherspoon himself, so that we might be free. I hate this sort of historical revisionism, but also even this idea of, imagine, Kirby, if you were going to be arrested today for a crime that won't even be articulated as a crime officially until, say, 100 years from now. I mean, there's sort of this anachronistic, I'm not sure if exactly the right word to put it is, but it doesn't make sense to penalize somebody from the past for something that wasn't a crime even at the time, especially in his case when I'm sure it was not something that he gloated to do or whatever. Maybe it was even imposed upon him, you know, by the trustees of Princeton or something. I don't know.
Well, again, I just bring it to the fore, some of these students that maybe have signed this petition, and now there's going to be a listening gathering to decide whether or not what to do with that statue. I would certainly, if I had a chance to talk to some of them, say, well, you actually are surviving because of slavery today. And they'd look at me and say, no, we're not. I said, well, I bet some of you have components that come from rare earths, and those are actually coming, in some cases, mined from young children in Africa that are slaves. I see that you got an iPhone there, and do you know that that's actually put together in places like in China, where actually people maybe aren't slaves, but they're paid slave wages? I can see some of the clothes that you have on that actually were sewn in China or Vietnam by individuals who, again, that were in some level paying slave wages or something of that nature. So before you become just a little bit too dogmatic about this, recognize that, yes, there were people in the 18th century that probably benefited because there was slavery and there was a real push to try to remove that. But at the same time, for your argument that because they benefited from slavery, we today live in the 21st century where there's no injustice, there's no blood diamonds, there's no attempt to put people back in slavery to then produce the goods and services that you take advantage from, is really having kind of a blind eye. And again, turning that blind eye to your own circumstances and then having a critical focus on the past reminds me a little bit of where Jesus talks about the fact that before you start worrying about the speck in another person's eye, you might worry about the log in your own. And so I think in some respects, while I can understand that some of these students feel well motivated to want to tear down the statue of John Witherspoon, I would encourage some of them to think about it for a second, because in some respects they are benefiting as well from some of the injustices that are taking place in our world today.
Do you think it's possible, Kirby, with all our debates about abortion, that future generations might look at us aghast at the widespread practice of abortion, especially in light of the technologies which document more and more and more the humanity of the unborn?
And that's what I've certainly said as well. You know, they've got a March for Life coming up, and that's just a good illustration of the fact that we are in a situation now where there have been even Supreme Court justices saying, you know, it makes no sense that we have allowed this abortion holocaust to take place. And I do believe that if indeed we see some kind of revival or reformation, maybe even a great awakening, people look back on the turbulent 1960s and 70s and 80s and 90s and the first part of the 21st century, and just be appalled that there were people, oftentimes even in pulpits of churches, justifying abortion and not understanding this whole issue of the sanctity of human life. So be careful before you start pointing the finger, because as you've heard people say before, when you point that finger, three other fingers point back at you, and maybe we need to do a little better evaluation of what we find ourselves in here in the 21st century before we cast too many stones and point too many fingers to the 18th century.
If we were to take every single significant American who made contributions to American liberty and say, okay, this person has to, you know, they couldn't have anything to do with slavery. They couldn't do this. They couldn't do that. In other words, if we were to judge them by today's standards, then virtually all of them would be found wanting. But of course, future generations could look at us and judge us by their standards in the future, and we would be found wanting too.
And again, I think that's a really good point. Again, if you look at those individuals, though, that were the signers of the Declaration or signers of the Constitution, most of them were Bible-believing people, and that is that they attended church, many of them, on a regular basis. Not all. Of course, we know the stories of Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and others. But the bottom line is these were individuals who I think were motivated by their faith to do the right thing. And I do have real questions about whether or not if people were to look back at this generation and say, now, what contribution did you make compared to those individuals that were either the signers of the Declaration or the framers of the Constitution? I think you would not necessarily match up quite as well. And like you said, if we start looking at any possible thing that might bother us, and I'm not minimizing slavery, but you can then go from there to all sorts of other issues that are associated with some of the individuals that brought about this country, you could very quickly eliminate a very significant majority of them. But if they were to then apply the same principles about some of these foibles that people have today, some of their sins, some of their vices, I think you could eliminate a lot of them as well. So I think your point's well taken.
Okay, we're basically out of time. Kirby Anderson, thanks so much for being with us. Probe.org for more information. Is that what you'd like for a website or point of view?
That would be great. Either way, I'll just use probe.org because I do have some material there
Great.
That you can use.
That'd on American history. Thank you, Kirby. All the best.